This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
On IndieComicBookNoise.com right now. 387, 388, 388. Some bitch.
Whoa, you're right.
The last one was the Sable.
I got three fucking indie episodes to listen to. God damn. I'm behind.
The two from like April.
Lost episodes, yeah.
The two lost episodes from April, and then the John Sable one.
Okay.
Wow, he really cut loose after he stopped recording.
Even Andrew doesn't like listening to our show. Great.
No, I listened to all of them. I just fell behind. Besides, I won't remember any. It's from April.
Don't.
All right, kids, we're back. It's Indie Comic Book Noise, the premier comic book podcast in all the land, talking about those exciting non-Big Two comic books. Everything from the little itty-bitty comic book you just made and didn't show anyone to Image, Valiant, Black Mask. Nothing is off the table here. Nothing. And I know that some of you are wondering who could possibly be on this. It's us, the full crew. We dug Phil out of cold storage, or maybe it's hot storage.
I thought we pod faded.
We got to Kevin, his Canadian comrade. I don't know what Canadians call each other.
Cohort.
But whatever it is, it's polite. And then Super Steve from the bunker, of course. We can't run this show without some professionalism.
It's episode 388 of Indie Comic Book Noise. How about that?
We would have been at 400 if it wasn't for these summer breaks.
You can also find us over on Marvel Noise, and both of our shows are part of the Deliberate Noise Network, run by the grand poobah Derek Coward, who has his own show, the Comic Book Noise podcast. So here we get to talk about the indie books we're reading. A couple of weeks before the Baltimore Comic Con. I'm going to be at, and you should consider going to, too. It is Labor Day weekend, September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at the Baltimore Convention Center, right in the Inner Harbor tourist trap zone of Baltimore. Awesome guest list, very art commission friendly, and big artist alley. It's kind of like Heroes Con Light, and I mean that in a good way.
And we're just a scant month or so removed from San Diego Comic-Con. So I'll have some exciting scores to mention that I got at that wonderful show as well. Although it'll be a bit of a, those of you that listen to Marvel Noise know we talked a little bit about that, but there's a whole non-Marvel portion of San Diego. I can hear the gasps now, but yes, there is more than just Marvel at San Diego. And I got a whole bunch of it. In fact, I'm going to start. I'm too greedy to wait. I'm sure y'all heard about Norm Breifogel having some health issues. DC Comics, in fact, rushed out the Breifogel Batman collection, which I picked up. But what I didn't know until I was walking the aisles and saw was that Whisper, the comic I talk about that started with Capital and then went to First that I love much, they did a collection because Breifogel, that was one of his early work before he moved over to the Big Two. He worked on Whisper.
Yeah, that's right.
So I bought this big collection that is supposed to help. I mean, the guy said, you know, it's one of these, what do they call them, benefit books, or I guess?
Where some of the cost of making the book gets donated so that they can pass the proceeds along to the creator in need.
And in the back, it has all kinds of little comics from people talking about meeting Norm and things like that, like little fun Mike Friedrich and Lee Mars did a little How We Discovered Norm, you know, a few pages, and
Everyone wants to take credit for Norm.
And so it's kind of cool. Like, it's not only these great comics that I read from my past that I'm enjoying revisiting, but it's also all these little fun extra bonus material sort of clipped in that. Plus, they also throw like essays in the beginning. Stephen Grant had already signed these. He was the writer for this. So it's, you know, got all these extra essays and just, you know, and I really like the series. So I'm like, yeah, I'll pay, you know, I could probably buy these issues a lot cheaper, but I'll totally I mean, it's great to have them in a collection, and you know, you feel bad, and it's great having these comics, and it's really nice done. This is Comics Mix. I hadn't heard of them, but they had a few different books, and they said there also might be plans to collect the whole Whisper series, like they did with Grimjack and some of the and Sable and some of those other first ones. But yeah, I just stumbled across this, and I was like, "Whoa, I love that comic!" And you know, anything I can do to help Norm out in some little way, and it was just one of those nice things.
Were Grant and Breyfogle the first creator? Did they create Whisper? Were they the first creative team?
No, I don't think it was. It wasn't. Breyfogle wasn't in the beginning. He came on to the book, but Grant's was the writer for it.
Right.
So they have to. That's the other thing, is they have to, you know, give like a half page of like where we are in the story type of thing. But that's fine. Like, I don't, you know, we're old enough that we've been reading comics that, you know, they have recap pages and stuff like that just for that. Yeah, so it's not like a comprehensive thing. It just had some cool, fun Whisper stories buried in this volume. And it was really neat to revisit it because I hadn't reread this stuff since probably, you know, it came out practically. It was just fun. She's like a ninja, but she's definitely the reluctant hero. And, that's the type of thing you find on the floor at San Diego, just random, like, oh, cool, I didn't even know they were doing a benefit. I mean, I have the Batman one, but I didn't know this other Comics Mix company did it. And
in revisiting that stuff, first it's John Sable last episode, and now this. We're going to hit all the first books by the time we're done.
We've changed from the Valiant cast to the first cast.
Right.
But, yeah, I just wanted to get that out there, so I'll pass the baton over to Phil. We haven't heard from Phil in forever. Phil, sure. What you got on the plate?
Speaking of long breaks, recently the Archie Horror came out again.
Yeah.
After quite a while.
Sabrina.
Yeah. Two issues of Sabrina came out so far, and only one of Archie. And both of those comics stopped in the middle of a storyline. I find... Like I used to crave them. Now it's like it was almost a chore for me to start reading them. Wow. So I waited so long. But once I did, though, like I enjoyed myself again. Like the Sabrina for me is the better quality book out of the both. So
I can relate to that, Phil. I feel that way with Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. My wife's a big fan, and I usually wait till there's two or three trades. And I'm always like, oh, I get it. And then I get into it, you know. But
yeah,
I feel that same kind of like, eh.
Like I say, Sabrina's a very high quality book. Like the art's better, the storytelling's better, but the Archie one's probably more fun. That's the good one, the thing about that one. But yeah, so basically Sabrina, the first issue just kind of ends off the storyline that was going on where her Harvey, I think it is, her boyfriend, gets killed off. And then he ends up coming back from the dead, but it's someone else and like slaughters his parents, that kind of thing. It's a really, the only thing I don't like about the book is that they have Betty and Veronica in it as witches. And I kind of wish they left that out, because then this, if they did, then this could have tied into the other Archie book. Because it's basically a tale of her past, like kind of her origin story. And then the Archie book, issue 9, it's basically just a Reggie issue. And Reggie was always my favorite Archie character. Because for me, he was kind of the hero of the book.
Wait, you regularly read Archie like before all
that? When I was a little kid, everyone.
No backsliding, Phil. You are on record as having been an Archie man.
Absolutely.
You know, I'll go on record. I read a lot of Archie.
A few of those. Definitely. My favorite was the Kid Archie one, where they're little kids.
Oh.
Yeah. That was years ago. Since this was the first, after that, I'd read the crossovers like Ninja Turtles and Archie or Punisher and Archie. It was a big letdown.
Predator and Archie was pretty good. And so was the RC versus Sharknado. That was good, too.
That one, I don't know. I think it's just because I get so mad when I watch the Sharknado movies. So I had trouble getting into that one. But yeah, Predator, Archie, I loved. But yeah, this one is about Reggie, and it's just basically him kind of going through his past a bit, how he has how he's kind of like a serial killer. Like, basically, he kind of blames himself for starting the zombie apocalypse, too, because he killed Hot Dog.
Right. Well, like, I can see how you'd be, he'd be your favorite if he's a serial killer, Phil. I take it back.
Well, yeah. Well, no, see, he's not like that in the other comics, though.
Are you sure? You sure we can't find some subtext that they seized upon that maybe he really is a serial killer in the regular Archies and they're just bringing it out slowly?
Well, the way they do it in this, like, it could work because that's what they do. They go into his past, kind of like in the other Archie universe, and kind of show why there's signs of him being like that. And so basically at the end of this, he leaves the group and he ends up joining the zombie horde and the Sabrina, who's Cthulhu's bride. And so now he's one of the bad guys and he has to go back to the camp and kill Betty. And that was one of the stupid things about this book, though, is the fact that Archie and Betty got engaged last issue, I guess. I don't really remember that, but yeah, so like, why would you do that in the middle of this zombie apocalypse? Dumb little storyline, but I guess that's what Archie's all about.
Well, it's just hard to believe he chose, you know. They should never have him be able to choose. Like, that should be a constant.
It's true, but at the same time, a lot of people are dying off, so.
Yeah, he should be getting them both as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping this wraps up by, like, maybe, like, 24 issues or something like that, because I don't kind of don't want to read it forever, but at the same time, it was a good comeback. I really enjoyed this issue, and it even though it's in the middle of a storyline, it acts alone, like, as a one-and-done. You don't need any of, like, the stuff before it. It's good.
Kevin, now that you've stepped out of the cupboard,
what
do you got?
What does that mean?
Can you hear the squeaky door?
Oh, no.
Isn't that like that Futurama episode? You've now entered the squeaky door. You know, instead of the Twilight Zone, that was their version of the thing? I don't think it was the squeaky door, though. Maybe. Oh, what was it?
The squeaky wheel.
No. It was something in the door. And then the door shattered. And then you entered the door.
There's a signpost up ahead. Next stop, Mid-Canada. Mid-East Canada.
Mid-East Canada?
Yeah.
What, when I'm in the Maritimes now?
You're still to the left of the Great... You're still to the east of the Great Lakes, but... Northeast, right? You're above and to the... You still have Great Lakes to the west of you. It's not like you're over Michigan or anything.
Be careful, Steve. You're dangerously giving away secrets to Kevin's location.
There's no finding him.
The Beaver Dam is not on Google Maps. He's hidden the base well.
See, that's where you can tell where I am because... You know, when you zoom into Google Maps and then there's just like a dead spot, a blank spot where you can't see and you're like, oh, he must be there.
When there's only one road in and one road out, you know he's going to have it well fortified, defended, and observed.
Well, you can just chop off the, you know, the drawbridge and everything. Like you just chop the ropes and then the bridge goes down and then you can't drive across with your car anymore.
Dope. Reading any comics, Kevin?
Not so much.
All right. Next.
All right, Steve, what have you
next
got?
Next person.
I don't know what more I can do for you, kid.
No, the thing is, since we've been off for so long, I did a con and I went to a con.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But I guess one's technically not called a con, so, you know. I guess it's more of a comics arts festival.
Art show. You and your art comics.
I know.
Ruining comics for the rest of us.
Letting all those average people in with zero admission and having it in a library. Like, what's up with that?
As long as you have your library card.
Well, it's funny. It's not just in the library anymore. Like, they keep on having more and more locations outside of the library. It's like there was one at, like, this Masonic Temple. And I guess they have music and other stuff there. So, like, some of the more mainstream indie artists were, like, it's hard to describe, like, mainstream indie artists, but, you know, names you would know. Like, a lot of those guys were off at another location. So that was kind of funny, because you, like, I remember staring at the long line for Brian Cabon because we went the someone wanted to go there, like the usual gang that I hang around with when I go to Toronto. And they're like, "Oh yeah, let's go check his line." And he had this like massive line going outside of the building. So instead we went inside and just stared at him signing and his massive line. But what they also had set up there was like a live drawing board projected onto this giant screen. So at any time they had like someone from the festival just drawing up there. So it was interesting.
They do that at C2E2 in the Artist Alley. They have they have rotating artists come through and draw on this projected thing. I thought it was really a good idea. Draws traffic there.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that in any other show, so I was like, this is pretty awesome. You can just sit there, listen to some music, and watch them draw for like an hour. It was also very dark there, so it seemed like it was a way different atmosphere than if you were actually in the library. But I think I hung out with like people too long or too much, if that's possible, because I'm like, I only came away with like 20 books or 15 books or whatever it turned out to be. So I was like, that's not enough books.
That's low for you. Yeah.
I also saw Gobo, you know, the infamous Gobo on Twitter from Montreal. So that was awesome. I haven't seen him in a while. And this was his first time to the show. So he was just like, this is what I want to see. This is awesome. Because, you know, you have 500 cartoonists in a library. And they have like six levels to the library. So now they're like encroaching on like the third and fourth level. So I'm like, well, they still got another two levels to go. So it's funny, like they stuck the Atomic Robo guys like way up at the top. So I'm like, is everyone gonna get traffic up there? But there doesn't seem to be a problem. But that's a lot of stairs.
I would say they're pretty famous for indie guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're not really art comics guys. I thought this was all gonna be art comics.
No,
like $50 for five pages. Drawn that afternoon type thing.
Oh, didn't you buy one of those? You said it was like four blank intro pages, four end cap pages, and then there was like two pages of story.
Exactly.
No, this
the wonderful
is...
world of art comics.
It's pretty much all comics, but obviously like more skewed towards like every other genre but superheroes, because it's like how the regular world is, basically. Like, you don't see, like, one category of, like, you don't see all movies, like, oh, 99% of movies are dramas or whatever, like, you know, the comics is so skewed. But I picked up a lot of stuff, though, you know, even saying that. Like, there was one guy, I picked, Ben Sears, I picked up one of his books, like, the other year from, that was coming out through Study Group, who I've talked about before, and this year he was actually there himself. So I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I can go there, pick all this stuff up. So I talked to him, and I picked up four, well, I guess one book, technically, and four comics from him. And I also got these cool trading cards with the book. Like, has a strength, intelligence, stamina, speed. You know, like Marvel trading cards? And I also got a pin where it says, I'm a Plus Club Heatseeker. So here I am just picking up, like, tons of stuff, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll just pretty much buy everything you have. Because he has, like a geometric style, so it's real simple, but pretty awesome.
At San Diego, Comixology had trading cards for comic creators. So I got one signed by Stan Sakai.
Oh.
They look like baseball. And then at the last day, they were just giving out the whole pack of, like, 50 of them or whatever. But yeah, I got the Stan Sakai one, and he signed it. And so they'd come to the Comixology booth, because obviously they don't have comics to sign, so they made these creator trading cards that look like, you know, hockey cards or football cards or whatever.
Some of them are weird, though. Like, I don't know. I guess that's a tradition, since the original ones were kind of weird to begin with. Like, some of those photos, I'm just like, what is up with that? Or some of them, it just seems like they're just press photos. Like, they're not... I guess original photos, is that how you would...
Like promotional photo?
Yeah, it's not like just a regular photo of them.
I was wondering how they chose, like, I wondered if anyone was kind of offended that they didn't get asked, or what do you know, like. Well, sure, Stan Sakai gets asked, but how come I don't have a...
No, I remember someone on Twitter saying, like, oh, I guess I'm not a popular enough comic creator to warrant a card, but I think it was half, at least half a joke type of thing.
I just recently did a Kickstarter for a bunch of Mike Allred Art Madman 3D cards, like a pack of 3D, and it came in the little 3D glasses and stuff. And in it was a creator card of him and Laura Allred. And just this last weekend in Baltimore at the Comic-Con there, I brought my little box. I folded down the box that they came in, and I brought those two cards, and I had them sign their creator cards.
That's a good one to get signed.
So you think I should go around with a jam piece, Steve, and ask creators to draw themselves? Or would that just be too weird?
No, I don't know if people would.
What you should do is ask them to draw the artist at the table next to them.
Across from them. Right, directly across.
That way they've got the reference right there.
Oh.
Well, Gabriel Hardman had that one where you could go and pose and he would draw. Like, he would just sit and he would draw you as the customer for a few shows. Did a few years ago.
You know what my favorite game to play at TCAF was, though? I would follow Gobo around, and whatever he bought, I would buy, because then I knew it was Gobo approved.
Oh, then you don't have to hear about it on Twitter.
That was funny. Like, he went to Box Brown, and there was, like, a Power Man comic, you know, in the typical Box Brown style. Not the Power Man you're thinking of.
What's a Gobo? Is it a Pokemon?
It could be. Yes. I should ask him that if he's a Pokemon.
Yes, it is.
I asked him if he was named after this obscure character in a Lovecraft short story. He was not. Turns out it's a reference to the Fraggle.
Or should I just call him Ryan? Is that better? But I also went to one of my favorite publishers there, which is Study Group. And, you know, I usually pick up, like, a ton of stuff. Like, I got one of the Zack Soto books, Power Button. Sadly, another issue of Secret Voice wasn't out yet, so I wasn't able to get that. I got the next two issues of Titan I talked about before. Remember my subgenre of, like, Jupiter or Titan moon space fiction?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That one sounded good to me.
I like Jupiter and Titan.
Exactly. I hope we're not talking about Sailor Moon or something, Steve.
No, I just got a pair of binoculars that are way stronger than the regular binoculars that I had. And I brought them camping with me, and I've looked at the Andromeda Galaxy through them. Oh my gosh, like, it was wider than the field that I could capture with the binoculars. It was awesome.
So I got another sci-fi from The Coward's Hole. I got Terra Flats. You know, and then I make the rounds, check out some of the stuff. I got the first issue of Popats. I think I covered one of these before about a legal drama.
You talked about Popats. Yeah.
So I got the first issue that I was missing this time, except it was like the first ones in this. I'm not half the size, but it's totally in a different size than the other one.
Did you ask for your money back?
No. Got another issue of Frontier that I think Salermo Bobgar approves of, from Youth in Decline. They always put their comics in, like, these little bags with their name on it, too. It's like brown paper bags. I don't know. Kind of unique. I had to pick up, of course, some Michael DeForge. I think that's mandatory for Canadians, you know?
Art comics.
Yeah, I have to buy some art comics. The Junior Paleontologist Power Hour. Dinosaur comics, but not dinosaur comics. You know what I mean?
No.
Then, of course, this is like a tradition when Self-Made Hero is there, is for me to pick up some Lovecraft and Colbert. The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadeth.
Yeah, I talked about that one, I believe.
And of course, they usually have like some kind of discount stuff or like bargain stuff or you know, if you go like, if you're there late Sunday, like people are sometimes trying to blow things out So I got Eel Mansions, which apparently came out a few years ago. And guess what I got hooked up with, too? ROM. Free Comic Book Day.
Nice.
Yeah, because I wasn't able to get that. So then, of course, you know, you're walking with a crew that's seems to be getting bigger and bigger. And they're like, oh, yeah, do you have that ROM, Free Comic Book Day? I'm like, no, I don't, but I would like to have it.
Well, you could have not been a cheapskate and bought the first issue then.
I guess so, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah, actually it was.
Yeah, it's a complete...
Did it say Free Comic Book Day on it?
No. But it included the Free Comic Book Day stuff before new material.
Was it only like a 14-page story?
No, it was the full new issue plus the Free Comic Book Day as a prequel. The Free Comic Book Day was the short story.
So at one point, cosplay isn't really a thing there. Like, it's indie comics, and it's not like they can... Like, it's not a safe space necessarily for cosplaying, because they can't guarantee, you know, it's a public space. But, yeah, we actually ended up...
Good God, what are you guys?
Canada isn't safe?
What, are you going to attack them?
No, but someone from the public might be there and be like,
remind me not to go to Canadian conventions. Apparently they're not safe, Steve.
Beaver attacks are very high.
Like, apparently Fan Expo, fine. But, like, something taking place at a public space, like a library, apparently not as fine. They can't guarantee anything.
Maple syrup landslide.
Didn't that happen in England?
Attack. There's all kinds of things.
Leave your Spider-Man shirt at home. You might get attacked.
But apparently we started running with, like, Captain America and everything, so that was kind of funny.
Ah.
And not male Captain America, just so.
Yeah, what does it matter? He's an evil Hydra agent.
Not male Captain America?
And then
it's the lady Captain. Peggy Carter, maybe.
That's not
No, canon. The one from MK2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. The daughter. That was a good series.
You know how I always rag on Fantagraphics, right? Usually?
Sure.
I know Gobo is a big Fantagraphics guy, and, like, pretty much everything. He, like, uses his Fanta bucks and buys everything. So, of course, I pick up a Fantagraphics book, Nodaway, from Joshua Cotter, who did Skyscrapers of the Midwest. And then Gobo's like, yeah, I didn't buy that one. I'm like, the one Fantagraphics book I buy, he doesn't buy. So then, of course, he had to go pick it up. So it was a pretty awesome time. Like, I didn't go to a whole lot of panels.
How many comics did you sell?
Zero.
Ugh.
I know. I was hoping to get free comics, but apparently they didn't think I was serious when I said I wanted free comics. They're like, I have to lug like a box of comics around with me. You better be serious. I'm like, of course I'm serious. But it didn't end up happening. So maybe at Fan Expo, I'll get a lot of stuff. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, Steve, what have you got for us?
I read the first couple issues of Eric Powell's new book that he's put out under his Albatross Funny Books banner imprint. He's writing and drawing Hillbilly. And it started out with a free Comixology short that came out that kind of introduced Hillbilly, the character who's this, like, wandering drifter who hunts witches and demons, and he carries with him the devil's cleaver. There's a little touch of humor and lightheartedness along with some of the bloodshed and stuff. I like the tone of the book, both visually and... as far as intensity is concerned, graphics and stuff.
Same style as like the Goon, that kind of paint. He's painting it, or
it's as good as the best stuff of the Goon.
Whoa!
You know, that you wish that the Goon was all the Goon was like that. It's as good. It is his painterly, a lot of washes, and everything is very withered, Western, droopy. Swampy almost a lot of lay in the blacks, but it ain't black. And
yeah, I've only read a little bit. I guess I've only read the good stuff, so to speak. So
you should definitely check out the Comixology short. That's for free. Then the first two issues are out, too. And the first issue reveals the hillbilly's origin. He tells it to a boy that he is in the process of saving. The short of it is he's, like, born with no eyes. Just, like, his eyes are just covered over with flesh. And eventually he gets turned into a weapon of vengeance by a witch against another witch, given the devil's cleaver. Fortunately, he doesn't get the devil's ladle, although they do show the devil's ladle. You just hit a dude with it, and he, like, turns to ashes. It's pretty funny. But the witch magically slits his eyes open, and he sees magically, and then sets him with the cleaver after the other witch, saying the other witch killed his mother and all this. And he's like, if I had never met you, my mother wouldn't have been killed. I'm going to start with you. I'm killing all the witches, starting with you. And she becomes his first victim. And then he goes on his quest to clean the West of witches wherever they roam. The second issue has the hillbilly on a quest. He's got to recover this enchanted root from an evil tree to make a crown that will break the curse of an innocent girl who's under a spell. And he gets followed by Death on horseback. And Death keeps following him and following him. And finally he's like, you just gonna, you know, follow me back there? You're gonna come up here and walk next to me like civilized folk do, that kind of thing. And all the dialogue is all reckon this and ignorant folks that and all. It's very well played as far as stepping into the world and feeling like you're almost seeing a short animated feature. The Death stuff is cool. The chatter back and forth is really good. And who Death is there for ends up being a nice reveal too. This is like an A++ book. I really am enjoying the tone of it. It's more like what I wish The Goon was. Less dialogue and more atmosphere.
I love The Goon.
The Goon is good. This is great.
Yeah, it does look really good. I pick up anything he does, but I haven't read that one yet, but I do have it.
Check it out. And again, at least check out the free stuff.
The art looks, yeah, awesome, everything.
So is it looped back around to me?
Yep.
All right, more San Diego fun. As you boys know from past episodes, I always check out Boudica Comics at San Diego. There, I've talked about Mavi and a few with the dreams and the house and all that other stuff. Daymares, that was the one. And so I went by this time, but they don't have any Boudica Comics now. Two of them are now have a Black Mask book they're working on. You know the publisher Black Mask.
I think
we must have covered one or two of the books. Yeah, they're working on the Kim and Kim book. So I picked up Kim and Kim number one from them. And they are Eva Cabrera and Claudia Aguilar. So they're the pencil and inks and color team. There's also a separate writer, Mags Visaggio. I don't know where she's from. Letter Zach Sam, don't know him either. But the art team is are the Boudica Comics people. And I like them, so I picked it up. So I don't know if you guys saw Kim and Kim, but they're these two lady bounty hunters who are kind of down on their luck. And they go for one. One of them has a connection to the more established bounty hunter group. Like, there's a main company, the big boss, and she's related to them, but doesn't want to use the family connection, wants to make it on her own. And one of them's more lighthearted and the other's serious. And so they get this lead and they track down this bounty that's worth, you know, a year's worth of salary or whatever. Because it starts out with a bounty that falls through their lap. You know, by the time they turn them in, the bounty is no longer good type of thing. So, but it's got the kind of humor and kinetic motion. As I've talked about, I think they probably have a bit of a manga feel to them. Also tucked in the back are some previews for some of their other books. But it was one of those ones I was glad they had new content, but I was kind of, I don't know, I guess it's a good thing they're with a big publisher, but I always wonder, like, is that, it's better, right? But on the other hand, you're like, oh, they don't have their own books anymore in a way. But I guess it's better to be with, I mean, I doubt Black Mask is some sort of, it's not like working for DC editorial or anything, but where they're like, no, you can't do this or you can't do that. But I don't know. But anyways, I enjoyed Kim and Kim. My LCS situation is still in flux, but the extent I can find future issues. I think the first one got a bit of buzz, but
yeah.
I don't know. So hopefully, you know, it gets picked up and keeps going.
Are stores still having problems?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't. The problem is they've, under their new system, they're more like regular stores. So they don't order the kind of glut of random stuff that they used to.
Yeah.
Because in the old days, they just have tons of everything. And now he keeps his orders much tighter, which makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. you don't want to have a bunch of issues that don't get sold or sit around. But the problem is, I don't can't always get there on Wednesday or whatever. So the pickings aren't, before I could go in and have my pick of all kinds of publishers and options and still get the big discount. So, yeah, it leaves me cold. But like I said, going to all these shows gets me issues that way. But yeah, I like this Kim and Kim. Not really Boudica comics, but Black Mask instead. And like I said, I hadn't heard of the writer. I don't know if you guys had, but yeah, it's fun.
I've never heard of that company even before. While we haven't been podcasting, I bought a shitload of Action Lab comics. So you're probably going to be really tired of me talking about Action Lab.
You were buying and reading a bunch of those right when we were in our previous episodes too.
Yeah,
I think you were just starting to ride that wave.
Yeah, now I got like everything, not everything, but pretty close.
Are you still reading Ginger Dead Man, Phil?
Well, that was only three issues, thankfully, but by the end it kind of won me over a bit.
That's what I like about you, man. Even those ones that you're kind of on the fence about, sometimes they can they never completely lose you.
No, I kind of wanted a fourth issue, but I guess I'll have to wait. But yeah, this one that I have for tonight, Voracious, it's amazing. It's probably their best comic, I'm sure. It's the best one I've read so far. And even Mark Waid has a quote on it where he says he highly, highly recommends this one. Basically what it is there's this American Indian guy. He was this big chef in New York, and his restaurant burnt down while he was off to get some melons. And his sister ended up dying in there that he was really close to. So he kind of loses his urge to cook and stuff like that. And he ends up going to like this desert town where he grew up and just works at a shitty diner where he uses a microwave. And he had this uncle that he only met once when he was like 12, and he ends up dying and leaves him a crap load of money and the keys to his like kind of hidden house. So he goes there and he ends up finding these suits that basically will put him back in time, but they'll only go to this certain time. Like he can't go back and reverse the death of his sister or anything like that. So he has to kind of go where it goes. And there's only one of them. So it ends up bringing him back to the dinosaur times. And so he's in this suit, and basically he ends up killing one of them. And he's really hungry while he's stuck there. So he ends up cooking one of them and eating it. And he loves the taste so much that he ends up starting going back in time. He'll kill a dinosaur and bring it back. And he opens his own restaurant and he's feeding people dinosaur. They don't know what it is though, but now he has like this really popular restaurant, and it's just this amazing comic. Like I highly, highly recommend it. It's top quality. The highest quality I've seen from them yet. Like any company could be publishing this. The art's great. The story's great. And yeah, the first trade's out now too. It just came out.
What was that one again, Phil?
Voracious by Action Lab. But yeah, that's probably out of everything I've ever talked about, I probably recommend this the most so far.
Of everything you've ever talked about.
Yeah, out of every company.
I'm definitely going to check it out then. I mean, that sort of unreserved qualification means I gotta check out Voracious. Do we go back to, is it Kevin's turn again?
Dare I say?
Oh, no.
I just spun the bottle and it landed on you.
Oh, boy. So how many people show up at your local con, Steve?
I don't know. They had a their best attendance ever this last time. But, gosh, I don't know. I'm terrible with numbers like that.
Huh. Because we just started getting in on this local con business. And, basically the first one was last year. And, doubled with this year.
When wow. you say we, do you mean like you're putting on a convention? Or what's the we part?
Is that me being funny?
No, I was asked, are you, is this we just your local friends or your comic book store? Who's putting it on?
Well, it's kind of funny. It's sort of like, it's like the city library is putting it on. But it's not like a real indie thing. It's like a lot of different aspects, like local film stuff with comics, with like whatever, you know, like more hipsters. Of a pop culture show, but
hipsters.
Hey, so hipsters got to eat too, Phil.
But I didn't go to the first year because I didn't really, they didn't have a lot of advertising. I really didn't know. I'm like, oh, is this like a real thing? And you know, when these things first start off, you're like, is this going to be for me?
And now you're running the thing?
So, of course, I don't get to go really, go. Like, I went, but, you know, I was selling comics there this year.
Wow. So, how much does this cost to go to? Let's start some ground rules to figure this out.
I think it was, $5 or something.
Okay. So, it's a nominal. Now, and you said, but it has a Hollywood and TV element to it, so there's celebrities.
Not really. There's sort of a film element, but that's because there's more filming being done here now. Like there wasn't a whole lot of filming before.
Okay, so what are people from TV or people from the movies? What do you remember any names?
No, but there's also people that do are involved in the industry, where they might have.
Makeup and stuff.
Like they're into props or.
Okay.
You know, that type of stuff.
Pull it out
too.
Of them, guys. Pull it out of them.
Now, were there panels at this show?
Yes, there were.
Okay.
But it was sort of in the same room.
Okay. So not different. So maybe one track of panels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Andrew, ask him where his table was.
And how many? And this was a 1 day show, a 2 day show?
Yeah, 1 day.
Okay, so it's a one-day show, nominal entry fee. I assume, like yourself, there were a bunch of people selling comics.
Yeah, there was a few people selling comics, yeah.
Okay, and then there were a few people involved in the entertainment industry. Were they selling, autographs and stuff, or were they doing the panels?
I think they were also doing panels, because it was weird. I don't know. Like, when you say, they say things like, oh, YouTube celebrity, they have so many subscribers. That is totally not my realm. So there was obviously, a cosplay YouTube type of element. And I really don't know, anything about that stuff.
Oh, I don't know. They have that whole YouTube convention is in Anaheim. And I don't know hardly anything except the actual Green Brothers. So I'm with you on that. But was this... So it was like a big room type of thing with the dealers and the programming and everything. And they had, did it seem like most people were there for comics or were they there for the YouTube people?
I think they were just there for a mix of stuff and that they had something more local than they're used to.
Okay. So that sounds like fun. How did you do selling your books?
Andrew, ask him what the name of the show was.
We're gonna get there, Steve.
Okay,
slow and steady. So, how did you do selling your books?
Better than the other show I did, last year. I talked about
better than the video game show.
Yeah, okay. But it this was basically selling almost entirely on comics. The other one, I did basically another third of money. It was 2/3 of this money at the other show, but then at the other show, part of that money was video games. So you get an extra third of money, plus it's all comic money, basically. And you're not getting any video games to pump up my sales type of thing.
Right. But did you make your table costs back?
Yeah, within the first hour.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So that's a good show.
Yeah, I had I knew, like, certain things, like, trying to, like, get more into see, like, what's hot and what people are speculating on, just so I have some general idea. Like, I'm not selling, like, a $50 book for a dollar. So, I knew, like, X-Men Apocalypse was out, and I had, like, the first appearance of Apocalypse. Not a mint copy, but I'm like, I wonder how much I can sell this for. So, I actually sold it for $50.
Oh, what? Nice. That's great.
Yeah. Issue X Factor?
Yeah. So I'm so like, oh, that's pretty good.
So do you put prices on the books, or you just have people come up? I'm curious.
Is that
about
Canadian it. Money?
That is.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What issue was it?
X Factor number 5.
What was special about that issue?
First appearance Apocalypse. Of Apocalypse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, In the modern game, as near as Kevin can confirm, I believe first appearances are what are driving the most money, at least from what I've seen. Kevin, isn't that true?
I think a lot of artist variants, too. Like, if someone's really popular, like, I don't know. What are some of those, I guess J. Scott Campbell or some people, like, are after, like, I know, obscure things like, oh, I'm really into Art Germ or something. I got to get all his variant covers. Or some of those I've seen go for pretty high.
Nice. So it sounds like you're really turned. Now, do you buy books specifically to flip, or these are just out of your collection?
It's pretty sad that I've started going to yard sales.
I have no judgment. I think that's smart. I know that's what you're providing a service. You're going and finding these books. And whatever people want to pay, that's, you know, you gave them a book at a price they want to get. I'm not one of these guys that's down on, like, if you find a book for a quarter and it's worth $50, sell it for $50. Like,
you're among friends here, Kevin.
make your money. I'm not one of these, like, if they wanted to do it, because you're saving them. I'm of the boat. I'd just rather pay. I don't want to get up at 6 a.m. and drive to one of your garage sales. If there's some book I want, I'm glad there's people like you that go out and dig them up, and then I can buy them and find them.
Yeah, I'm
Andrew. Ask him what the name of the show was.
we're getting there, Steve.
I'm just trying to sort of connect people with some comics, and that's why I was like, oh, we offer like a lot of discounted comics, you know. Because I have some, like,
watch. So is it just you, Factor? Or are there, like, other people? Are you selling these comics, or is this, like, a operation you have? With, like, a bunch? Because you used we a lot. And that's
He's got what, an army of chimps.
Well, the thing is, I have to, you know how I put my father into the slavery thing to carry my books for me at cons?
Well, I know that well.
Yeah. See, Phil knows this. So I press him into action to help me manage a table, too. So
does he negotiate prices as well?
I bet he does everything. I've seen how Kevin works with him.
This is like Tom Sawyer stuff. He's sitting there while everyone else paints the fence.
Yeah.
So you make your dad sell your comics for you. Okay.
Yeah, I want to go around and see what's at the show too. We're beside
that,
someone.
That nice that he'll do that. Like he'll.
So
yeah,
don't spend any time factor for less than 50.
So did you spend any time at this table, or did you just show up in the morning and say, "Have fun, Dad. I'm gonna go wander around."
But no, I know what it is though. It's because his dad sees his love for comics, so he gets really into it. Like my dad was like that too. Like it got him really happy. My dad never liked comic books, but he loved taking me every week.
Right, so you used to make your dad work for you to sell your comics?
Well, I didn't slave him like that, but I understand like why.
Well, you walked around the show floor, you made him sit behind the table to sell the books. Yeah.
You know, I did disappear for half an hour, but that's because one of the artists at the show actually had bought comics from me before the show. So I'm like, oh, we sort of had some kind of connection. So, and then he started going into like talking about his pens and brushes and stuff, and without him knowing it, all like this group of people had formed, and it was like he was conducting a panel for like 10-15 minutes that he wasn't even aware was really happening.
All right, so what was the name of this show, Kevin?
I can't give you the name of the show, Andrew, then the mystique is gone.
The Big Apple Comic Book Festival.
Attendance was way down in 2017.
Like, sell all your books for $1,000 if, like, more power to you. That's how you make money. Like, if you were selling them for a loss, we'd be worried about you.
Well,
or I guess if your dad was selling them for a loss, we'd be worried about you.
No, there was probably early on where I didn't know, like, the other show, like, I was totally unorganized. So there was probably, I probably let some books go lower than I should have. Like, if you're selling a Deadpool book for $1, probably not a good idea. I sold a lot of Deadpool. I had my Walking Deads for like $15, $20. So that was pretty good. Like, Walking Dead always sells. Like, that's just...
So this has turned out to be a good little side business. Good on you, Kevin.
Like, I have that...
I'm impressed.
My return to the show from last year with the video
games. So back to... cleverly avoided my question, though. So do you price your books, or are they... They got to ask you, how much is this?
No, I know I price them. Like, so at the video game show, I basically had one box of price books and everything else was $1. But for this show, I have spent like hours and hours and hours like pricing like thousands of books, basically.
Nice. All right.
And they were sort of in alphabetical order, but I didn't have like the dividers in. And so like the next show, I'm going to have like the dividers in, because like no one had dividers at that show, basically.
So, Kevin, you're becoming Chuck Rosansky before you know it.
I know. It's pretty awesome. Well, the other thing I was going to say is there was a guy right beside mine, and he had, like, two boxes full of dollar books. So then, like, all these people are, like, swarming the dollar books and, like, $5 trades and everything. So then, like, all the dealers, comic dealers, start going to his booth and buying all these books, too. And he's like, if all the dealers at my booth, maybe I'm selling these dollar comics for too cheap.
I would say so. I do know a few dealers that will actually do that at the beginning of the show. They go to the other dealers and pick books out, and then they'll just flip them at their own booth for more than they paid it right there. I mean, that's how you identify what's underpriced and you make your money on it. So
yeah, but
that's how the game is played.
It was pretty blatant. Like, he was making jokes about it. Like, you get to know everyone. It's pretty obvious what is going on.
So what's the name of your booth?
I already
told Kevin's
you.
Comics?
I just slipped it in there earlier.
All right, Steve, what have you got for us? Sounds like a fun show. If I was going, I would definitely buy comics, but I wouldn't buy no $50 X-Factor off you.
No,
I think
no,
I got that somewhere.
That was...
Well, I wonder if I saved it. I might have given that one away. Oh, well. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Steve, what have you got for us?
I tried another Zenoscope book. I know.
Whoa.
This one is a 12-issue series that I checked out the first two issues of, called Robin Hood, I Love New York, written by Joe Brucia and Lou Iovino, with art by David Lorenzo Rivero.
When you said Robin Hood, I thought you meant the other Robin Hood book I have. The one with the gay Robin Hood?
Oh. No, this is Robin Hood with a Y.
Oh.
I've got no history with this character, though it seems it's a recurring character for
she
Zenoscope.
Had, before that, she had a 4-issue miniseries and a couple one-shots.
All right. I just saw a blonde with a bow and decent-looking art, so I picked it up. Maybe I was thinking back to like Ron Mars and Greg Land's Sojourn from the old cross-gen days.
Mm-hmm. I love
the
that
blonde
book.
And the green color scheme and all that.
Oh, yeah, but the book I got was Merry Men. Sorry, that's it, from Oni. Okay, go on, Steve, sorry.
The first
I thought
issue
we had
this,
read the same comic.
The first issue of this Robin Hood, I Love New York, establishes Robin as like living really simply in the heart of New York. She's kind of like an old gunslinger who's hung up her bow. But she gets roped back into action, breaking up a convenience store robbery. She saves a prep school girl and then brings down a gang of thugs. And by the end of the ish, she's putting up a private eye sign on her door, declaring herself open for business. Premise sounded decent enough. The art was good. I'll check out number
Jessica
2.
Jessica Jones now?
Yeah, I figure I'll check out number 2. It had this urban hunter-y kind of a thing, you know, going. All right, so... Remember Escape from Monster Island, the other Zenoscope book I tried?
Yeah.
It started off sound. The first issue sounded really interesting. A crack team of squad of elite soldiers have to go to like a monster island to recover some artifact.
Always a good type of story.
There's going to be some type of twist or something. And then by the second issue, it went totally off the rails with some demon sorceress who was going to be the adversary or whatever, right? Well, in issue two, this book goes completely off the rails, and I'm done with it.
Why?
But the next issue could bring it back.
There's lizard men in the sewers that are introduced as, like, the ongoing threat. Totally lost interest. But it was worth a shot. The first issue was good. Then they went into the lizard men in the sewers thing.
That's too bad, because that's a story I'd want to. It's too bad they've screwed it up, but they're known for that.
They're not bad with their ideas.
I used to love them when they were, like, one-and-done stories, but then they made this, like, superhero-connected universe, and it just lowered the quality big time.
I just thought it was so funny that I had the exact same experience with the other book I tried for them, so...
Yeah.
I couldn't help but report. Andrew, anything else from San Diego?
Keep them honest. Oh, yeah. As I mentioned on Marvel Noise, I went to the Eisners, which was a super lots of fun. Thanks again to Conan from My Comic Shop for hooking us up with seats. So I don't know if I told you I got outed by Andy Tom on Twitter. Andy Tom contributes to the Collected Comics Library, which is back. That's the Chris Marshall. That thing's been going on for like 12 years or whatever, but he took a little break and he's back. So anyways, apparently he was like, hey, I saw you at the Eisners from Tom King's selfie. And I'm like, what? And so he posted it and there I was, stuffing my face in the background.
Nice.
You know, if it's a photo of me, I'm eating. So, keep it classy, Andy. But anyways, went through the whole night and, you know, they give you a program and all this stuff and I was marking it down. But my memory is complete rubbish, like complete rubbish. So the next day I'm hitting the floor and I go to the image section and they have rotating, like any con, at the publishers they rotate. Like people have their own tables, but you can also go there. And Dustin Nguyen was there, and he had Descender he was selling and other stuff. And I was like, holy cow, I think he won the Eisner last night.
Recording on that. Would you like to use a lifeline?
That's the Eisner calling.
That's Eisner letting me. And so I'm like, man, but I wasn't sure because my memory's so bad. So I'm like, oh, I'll play it cool. So I go up and I buy a copy. I'm like, yeah, I went to the Eisners last night. It was fun. I'd never been. Nothing. No feeder. No. He sketches a little doodle on it, signs it, thank you, and heads on. And I'm like, and then I look up and yes, he won for best digital media painter for this book. And I was like, boy, that guy is either like the has no interest in the Eisners, is the humblest, like it was all, I was fishing to be like, because I didn't want to say congratulations on the Eisner if I had remembered incorrectly, but I hadn't remembered incorrectly. And I'm like, I don't know if he just doesn't care about it or was humble or whatever, but that sort of threw me a little bit, because I'm like, if you win an Eisner, man, to go back to Kevin's favorite publisher, man, you walk by Fantagraphics, they have all the signs up about what books won and everything, and most of them really can't top, like, all the publishers usually hang signs, like, come see Eisner nominated, Eisner winning book, or whatever, you know, as a marketing thing. So I just thought it was really funny how modest he was, but it's also Jeff Lemire's on the book. But yes, it's Descender from Image, and it is Dustin Nguyen's Eisner-winning portrayal of best. Let me get out the program to give you the official title of what he won it for. Best painter / multimedia artist. So, yeah. So that was my Eisner winner experience running into them, and it was fun. And then I also purchased, when I was in Italy a while back, I bought some Italian comics, and we talked about the wonderful Captain America translation. But I also bought some Italian comics, like Dylan Dog.
I love Dylan Dog. Yeah.
When I was at San Diego, they had a publisher there that had it in English. And I'm like, holy cow, I just bought some of these in Italian, and I don't read Italian at all.
Dark Horse put out like a big omnibus kind of thing.
So this is from, this company is called Epicenter Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Dylan Dog, but it's in English, not Italian, so I can read it. I mean, the other one I just look, I mean, I can, do you really need to read a comic? It's just pictures anyways. But, yeah, so I'm like, maybe I could teach myself Italian by reading the English version and looking at the Italian, but they're different stories. But anyways, Dylan Dog is real. It's this very nice black and white. Like, the art is super sharp. But, you know, he's always getting involved in mysterious underground with beautiful femme fatales and danger at every turn. But yeah, so that was my fun. Hey, why don't I get an English version of this Italian comic? Because I was just over there.
So Italians make great comics, too.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff all around.
Phil?
Well, there's something I've been dying for you to talk about, but I think you're only saving it for your short little thing. So I'm just going to go ahead and bump it up. Grizzly Shark, the miniseries there.
Grizzly Shark was awesome.
It's amazing. I love the covers. The first cover where it's just his fin going through like the forest top. And then the second one's called Grizzly Shark Returns, and you just see like the shark kind of going at them. But I thought it was an ongoing, but it's only a 3-issue miniseries.
Well, remember, it was originally just supposed to be a one-shot joke thing that Ryan Ottley had done, and they decided to
they did it for 24-hour comic day.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he decided to republish it, and Ottley continued it on with the Grizzly Shark Returns, and then Grizzly Shark versus Sea Bear is the part three. Terror in the Woods, man. It's published by Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, bloody, completely baby over killing, the top.
Baby killing. There's no distance he won't go.
It continues the characters of the half boy who got his bottom half bit off, and that
they're hilarious.
Dim-witted giant dude. And there's a Boy Scout troop and a sheriff and a trap and a cliffhanger actually that ends the between the two issues, and they end up getting Sea Bear involved when they get Grizzly Shark close to the water. But these Grizzly Sharks, they're tough.
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch of them now, not just one.
It's grotesque and ridiculous, but it's like only in comics. It's great comics. It's like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking about Jack Davis recently and Jack Davis dying. It's like these kinds of kinetic, crazy, kooky. These are like the things that remind me of like Mad Magazine and Crazy and Cracked and stuff when I was a kid. You know, it would be like PG versions of these same types of ideas.
Yeah.
But here it is taken to the extreme with all the blood and guts flying. It's crazy. I really enjoyed it.
Me too.
Back to you, Kevin.
Yeah, I discovered something about indie comics. So I like B1 more than King Bone Presents. I read some of Slurmo's comics, and I should say N Friends, since it's not just him in King Bone Presents. So I was trying to like sort of figure that out. But B1 is like the relationship. Well, I shouldn't say all relationshipy stuff, because there is Tales of Vroom Vroom Cat in here. And then like a date night story. Like some aliens and stuff, so I brief mention, but maybe I'll go into it later when I diagnose my symptom or whatever the case may be. But yeah, it was pretty interesting when you read. I guess this is like true indie. Like this isn't any TCAF, big publisher indie or Image indie. Like this is as indie as you get.
Yep, I like all the stuff that I've seen from those guys. Fun collections. What did you think of the ROM pre-comic book day? Did you read it?
I did. It was all right.
Right?
It was a short story.
More ROM.
Like, I didn't... It didn't make, like, a huge impression on me.
I recently read the Onks miniseries, issues from Chris Ryle and Gabriel Rodriguez, where Onks... It's like a ROM love letter kind of thing. Onks appears on Earth, like, in a total ROM homage splash page, hooks up with this crack military squad. They all have their personalities that get exhibited in this like little personality like information profiles as back matter and stuff, so they actually try to develop the character some. And Onks is chasing this like alien spore infection that's mutating indigenous life on the planet. And she's got this cool laser sword and really cool looking armor, I think. And gets captured, and one of their teammates gets turned, and it's all a decent enough thing. And then to hear that they got the ROM license, which was Ryle's sort of plan all along, so to speak, I found the redesign of the ROM armor to be kind of too, kind of like Transformers animated style. Too soft in the curves. Like there's a, he's got a round cranium, like a regular rounded skull, rather than it being like toaster shaped on the top. That kind of bothers me. He's a Wraith Slayer, but he's Lord of the Solster Order, not really a Space Knight, which I guess Marvel has the whole Space Knight thing as part of, because they're kind of flaunting it.
They mention it once in the comic, though. Like, I think one of the titles, it says Space Knight.
Well, Marvel's... Marvel also put out a miniseries called Space Knights in
Venom Space
early
Knight.
2000, where they probably got the trademark and everything.
Yeah, they got the Venom Space Knight going on, and they created a new non-Galador-related Space Knight thing in one of those backup stories in Guardians of Infinity recently, too. So they're really doing Space Knight-y things to try to lock down that concept, I think.
Yeah, they even reprinted that Space Knights miniseries, I assume just to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. And ROM is by Christos Gage and Chris Ryle writing, with David Messina and Michelle Pasta providing the art. The creatures, like the Wraiths, the Mutates, they bother me a little bit in how clean they are. Like they almost look like they're sources of light rather than things that light is reflecting off of, with the color scheme, and it's very animated-y to me. ROM is kind of little-headed in his design too, so he's like big-handed and little-headed, so the proportions really look wonky at times.
Yeah, there's some weird panels.
It bothers my ROM aesthetic, but ROM discovers a Wrath like lead town and just starts banishing them all to limbo left and right, and it gets caught on social media to kind of start the psyops war against ROM's appearance on Earth. And ROM saves the one female who's a human. Her parents get slaughtered right in front of her, but they were really killed long ago by the Wraiths who were, had replaced them.
And her name is Brandy with a Y, right, Steve?
Yeah, I wish. But what's crazy is the issue ends with G.I. freaking Joe showing up.
Yeah.
So it's like right away, right in your face, like they're not going to like get ROM established at all, right to G.I. Joe land.
Well, the reason they did that, though, is because one of the things that made it big for Marvel is all the heroes and stuff crossing over. So this
not the first issue.
No, but this is, they explained in like in the back how this is their way to kind of make him feel connected in a universe again. So yeah, so I guess a lot of them are going to be showing up a lot.
Well, it is a shared universe. Like, maybe plus that's what the movies are going to do.
But make who connected? That's the thing. You got to establish him. You know what I mean? Not everybody's read the 75 issues 40 years ago.
Isn't it weird that the Wraiths can show up, though?
They were supposed to be toys, but the toy line flopped before they could design them.
Yeah. You need some Ditko variant covers or something.
There was a lot of variant covers to the first issue, and some of them were cool, but most of them were the design of this new design with the round cranium, and it's just weird.
So with Micronauts and ROM, this doesn't seem like the greatest of track records.
Don't forget Mask. No. That's next.
Yeah, Mask. I like this better than the Micronauts so far, but I'll give it a few more issues, but I wasn't too happy with the vibe it gave off.
You probably won't want to give it a few more issues because it's going to be that big crossover.
They're not bad creators, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, but the redesign is what I think I'm with Steve a little bit. The Free Comic Book Day kind of made me too wary to begin with, so I was waiting for more data points because I was like, I don't like part of... Like, it's based on this dumb toy, and that should be where you're coming from. Yeah. Like, that's kind of the whole nut of it. And otherwise, you really are just paying for the name, and the name doesn't mean anything. Like, if the name doesn't convey anything, then why would you care about it? So stick with the more traditional design, and if you don't think you can make it work, I think you just risk turning off. I mean, we talked about this if they ever get a Romnibus, how I'm not sure the appetite for Rom has anything to do with the actual appetite, or more have to do with the sort of nostalgia because he wasn't around. Mm-hmm. Because they've tried to bring back more obscure characters, and I don't know the staying power of all of them.
I mean, if you're going to use a new armor, why not just use the Ankh's armor? The Ankh's armor is way cooler.
Yeah.
I enjoy than this new ROM
design. Way cooler. I like the Ankh's thing. I mean, and obviously Gabriel Rodriguez, he did the Little Nemo stuff, Return to Slumberland, and really leveled up on that stuff. But I would have preferred they did another Ankh story, to be honest with you.
Well, there is something else you could read, because in an Action Lab comic I'm reading, Vantblade, in the newest issue, there's Mom Space Knight.
Yeah.
And it's the same type of design and everything.
Well, everybody's got to get their Space Knight action.
Do you know what power button was that I bought at TCAF? It's sort of like a ROM takeoff, too.
Well, I remember years ago at the Zine Fest there, I bought that ROM from Drippy Bone Press that was also a parody comic of it. So ROM exists in the ether more in our ideas. And that's the other problem. The longer you get away from it, the more we have ideas of the comic that maybe don't even match the comic. That's why I enjoy our deep dives so much, because it's good to sometimes go back to the source material and realize sometimes what you thought it said or did isn't really what it said.
And on that note, that makes up for a good return episode of Indie Comic Book Noise.
Yeah, we'll see when the next one is.
Yeah, we'll have this out in October.
And I'm going to claim this as a San Diego-style episode. Yeah, I said it. I'm glad no one's going to fight me on that.
No, because what can I say? Reveal the name of my con? Come on. Oh, I can say, no, it's a TCAF episode.
Right, and you hate mail.
Well, all right. Thanks for listening.
There you go.